Hey there, this is Justin with the Huffines Institute. Now remember, there'll be a question at the end of the podcast that, if answered correctly, could result in someone receiving one of the great-looking Huffines t-shirts. The catch? You need to be the first one to send your answer to huffinespodcast@hokn.tamu.edu.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and I want to welcome you to the Sports Medicine Podcast from the Huffines Institute. Thank you so much for taking the time to download the podcast and to listen to it. I hope you find that these are very valuable, and we have such a great time putting them together and talking to leaders in the field of sports medicine. And we certainly have a leader today in the field of sports medicine that we're talking to today, Dr. Jim Pivarnik, who is a professor at Michigan State of Kinesiology and Epidemiology. He's the director for the Center for Physical Activity and Health there and the Research Integrity Officer for Michigan State. He and I actually most of the time interacted in his role as president of the American College of Sports Medicine. He was president, a couple of years ago, right? Right, Jim?
That's right.
At this point?
I'm immediate past president this year.
Yeah, so welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, we are so pleased to have Jim here because not only does he have all these other things, but he's got an incredible research program in a very interesting topic, and that topic is exercise and pregnancy. So let's just start with the big question. Is it safe for a woman to exercise when she's pregnant?
Well, the overall answer is yes, but I will always qualify that with assuming she has a healthy pregnancy going on, and it's always wise to let one's healthcare provider, be it a physician or nurse midwife, let these individuals know that you're being active, because you know the one thing about pregnancy that I learned way back is the variability among pregnancies among women, and even within a given woman, is so great that you almost have to treat each one individually. So the kind of exercise you would do with one pregnancy might not be the kind you would do with another, just depending on how your condition progresses. So it's fascinating, if nothing else.
You're right. If a woman is pregnant and she wants to continue exercise, what would be the best source of information for her to find out about maybe what type of exercise program is best for her? Other than, let's say she goes to a physician and the physician says, "Well, I really don't know."
That's probably the answer she'd get if the physician's honest.
Yeah.
I would send her to the Physical Activity Guidelines for Americans. If this is a woman who has exercised for a bit, I would also possibly send her to the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. I would also send her to a paper that I happen to be an author of in Clinics in Sports Medicine a few years ago, where we dealt specifically with women who are athletic. And the problem is that if you're talking about the real gunners, the women that barely break stride when they're pregnant and in terms of their physical activity, we haven't done a lot of research on them, at least quality controlled kinds of research, because two things. Number one, there's not enough of them. And
right.
Number two, from a public health standpoint, I mean, this might sound funny, but nobody cares because they're the healthy ones.
Right.
So even though we can learn a lot from very, very healthy individuals, I mean, our field did this for years. We worked on the athletes and tried to generalize a bit to the average citizen. Still, it's a different animal when you're talking about a woman who is maybe doing walking for exercise versus one that still wants to do her triathlon training. We just haven't done a lot of, well, we haven't done enough in general, because your first question was, is it safe? We're just still determining that and trying to get the word out. So you can imagine that the research is not quite up to snuff yet where it needs to be.
Yeah, and for the listeners, we will put links in the show notes for all the organizations that Dr. Pivarnik just mentioned, so you can go to those. You were talking about the difference between the trained woman and the untrained with how they respond to exercise during pregnancy. So I think you make a good point about people. Was it like Lisa Leslie, who was the basketball player, who
yes.
was pregnant for and still continued to play to some extent, didn't she?
A little bit, yeah. Now, that's a little shaky because one of the caveats when in terms of the is there anything you shouldn't do is there are activities where there's a lot of violent kind of collisions and things mm-hmm. like that. So I certainly wouldn't recommend hardcore basketball to any extent. My wife has a friend who likes to play volleyball and used to play competitively, and I told her. She promised to be good and never die for any balls, but we both knew better. The competitive juices would get flowing, and I convinced her that maybe not the best exercise for her because she'll forget she's pregnant and think she's still an athlete, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to be diving on your belly at that particular point.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I guess a little bit of a shift. What is it? Is this good for the fetus? Is exercise during pregnancy good for the fetus? Has there been any studies that have looked at of the children afterwards?
Well, stay tuned.
Oh, okay.
That's an incredibly important question. We have some preliminary data that would suggest yes. Certainly in terms of a body composition, body fatness, Jim Clapp, who's done a tremendous amount in this area several years ago, found that babies born to mothers who continued to exercise were born a little lighter, and most of the difference in the body weight, not when I say lighter, I don't mean low birth weight, I mean just lighter, literally. They're still in the normal range.
Right.
But these kids were born with less body fat than children that were born to their sedentary counterparts. So certainly there's something there, at least in the body weight area, and there's a lot of other things that need to be looked at as well.
Well, we'll continue to watch the literature for y'all's study when it comes out, because I'm sure that will add to it. Does exercising during pregnancy actually help with the delivery itself?
There is some evidence that this is correct, that there is also some that it's probably doesn't do a lot. The problem is some of the earlier studies, you think about it, it's hard to do a randomized control,
right?
And the fact that every pregnancy and every delivery is so different. But I'll tell you this: if you think about it, labor is a lot of. I tell women it's like you're lifting weights with your uterus.
Mm.
You know, it's a muscle, and you're pushing and you're doing this anywhere from an hour to all day.
Right.
And I have had women tell me, boy, am I glad I lifted weights, because I was kind of, you know, my arms were sore and legs were sore and all of this. I couldn't imagine somebody who doesn't. So certainly there's a couple studies and there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that, yes, there's something good going on there.
Well, you bring up a good point, and that is that we haven't broached yet, and that is that we've just said exercise in general. Is it better if they do resistance training, or they do aerobic training, or a little bit of both?
Well, again, stay tuned.
Okay.
The resistance training is a big unknown. I've got a student working on that right now. That's the one thing that we know a lot of women do that. If you go to any major health club, there's always some prenatal resistance kind of training, even if they're using resistance bands or something, that the women do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly no case studies that I've ever seen that say it's a bad outcome. But have we done the research we need to do? The resistance training, the fear there is that women will do the wrong thing in terms of Valsalva and holding their breath when they lift, which nobody should do, but occasionally people do that. And during pregnancy, it could impede the blood flow to the uterus, and the woman could pass out or something. But she'd have to be lifting heavy weights and really being having poor form. What we usually tell women, just because we know so little, is if you want to lift, fine. Really be careful of balance, because your balance is off.
Mm-hmm.
Be better to use bands or machines rather than slinging a big bar around. And also increase the repetitions and decrease the resistance itself a little bit. So most of the evidence we have is rather than on resistance training is with aerobic, and there we're pretty confident that even an average woman who's not particularly an athlete can certainly do the same 150 minutes a week that regular folks can do.
Mm. Now, are there any stipulations about, you talked about balance, but are there any stipulations about not doing exercises where you're laying on your back?
Same thing, yeah. The fear is with the enlarged uterus, particularly when you're farther along, you're going to impede blood flow through the uterine artery, and you don't want to be doing that. So now, can you roll on your back for 5 seconds or 10 seconds when you're stretching? Absolutely, but what we're talking about is extended periods of time. Women are even told to, and for comfort too, to sleep on their left side rather than on their back, and that's one of the reasons that they're told to do that.
Yeah. Now when you study this, and the listening audience may not be aware that if we study human subjects, we always have to have approval through the human subjects committees of our different institutions. Do you have problems getting these studies approved by the Human Subjects Committee?
Yeah, not problems, but you have to be very, very thorough. Make sure that if you're doing some sort of an intervention, and in my case, I haven't done a lot of intervention-type studies. It's more measuring what the women are doing already.
Oh, okay.
So that's a little bit easier, but you're right. When you start doing the intervention, then it's you got to be a little bit more careful.
Do you... You know, another question just popped in my head here. Do you ever get pushback from women who basically say, well, you've never had a baby. You don't know what it's like. How can you really help me to understand whether or not I can exercise during pregnancy?
Generally, my students and other faculty I know. It's like, yeah, let's hear you talk about breastfeeding now. So what I do is I smile and I listen. And I write down everything they tell me, and I say, yes, ma'am, you're right. like, what do I know about that? Oh, you're right. it is interesting to be a male in this field, but I guess it's no different than a woman being a urologist in some respects. So,
yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's one of those that you have to take a lot of advice. And the thing about that I found is, guess what? It varies.
Mm.
So what works for one woman doesn't work for another. I just use the example of breastfeeding.
Right. Now,
some women with all the best intentions would like to breastfeed for a long period of time. Well, that's great, but then you have to plan. You have to pump, and then you have to store the milk, and you have to do all of that, which is fine. And I had a student once that had a breast pump she brought into work, and she'd do that, but. But after a while, if you really want to exercise a lot, it's just, I'm told, it's very uncomfortable. And then the decision, oftentimes, if you're really active, is that they stop a little sooner maybe than they would otherwise.
Yeah.
But we do know, though, that Cheryl Lovelady, a colleague of mine at UNC Greensboro, does a lot of work with lactation, women who are lactating and milk content and quality and that sort of thing, and she's found that there's no problem at all, and the baby gets all it needs, and certainly the content of the milk and the quality of the milk is fine.
Well, you know, we've talked about the pre-birth stage, and we talked about the delivery. If a woman has exercised, let's say done resistance training and some aerobic activity, does that help her recover from the birth faster?
Stay tuned. You're asking if there are students out there listening. Tim's mentioned about at least 5 different either master's theses or doctoral dissertations that could be done. Because my best answer on those is I don't know, and that's what I every time I give a talk I preach to the group. It's like, look, get in there and start finding this stuff out, because it certainly makes sense.
Right.
But have we done the right kinds of studies on that? No, I think the one that I was talking about that my student's doing now is going to help us a lot, but it's only one study. We need to do more.
Right. You know, and that actually brings up a point I think about sports medicine. Sometimes people will ask me, where do you get your ideas for your research? And it basically just comes from looking around.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's the questions. It's like, wow, geez, I never thought of that before.
Right.
that somebody might just ask. And We don't know the answer to that. Well, somebody ought to do something.
Yeah. Sometimes coming up with the ideas is the easy thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's the doing the study, because if you haven't noticed the 9-month gestation, it's not like rats. It takes a while if you really want to go through carefully and check at all trimesters and that sort of thing. So it's not the kind of thing you do for your nice summer project and do prospective data. That's the problem.
That's the point. I hadn't even thought about it. That it does take time to do that.
Sure.
And so many of us in academic settings, we're supposed to turn out, you know, 2 or 3 articles a year, and it doesn't that topic doesn't lend itself to doing very quick studies, does it?
Not at all. Not at all. So, and if you use cross-sectional data, well, that's fine. It's quicker, but you know the downfall of that, because we're talking about one group of women. Maybe you're looking at them in the third trimester and another group in the second trimester. Well, those are two different groups of women. And to be able to generalize that they would have, that the women that you studied at second trimester would respond just like these third trimester women, that you can't infer too much from that.
Right. Wow. Isn't science fun?
It is.
It's a good living. Yeah.
It's a real job any day of the week.
There you go. Let's really shift gears here, and let's talk about American College of Sports Medicine. We talk a lot on the podcast about sports medicine, and we have yet, though, really to talk about some of the professional societies. And having you on is such a great opportunity to talk about the largest sports medicine organization in the country, and that's the American College of Sports Medicine. As the immediate past president of ACSM, What kind of things do you see coming down the pike for sports medicine that we're either going to have to deal with or we're going to have to investigate more thoroughly?
Well, it's interesting. You name the title of our college, and you know as well as I do, Tim, that we have evolved so much since the way it was founded. But just sticking with the sports medicine, which most people would think, that sounds like athletics and exercise and maybe injuries. Mm. Well, the hot topic is concussion, whether it's the NFL, head-to-head contact, in the little leagues, in the high schools, and all of that. There are now laws on the concussions and when the kids can return to play and all of that. Certainly anything, if some of the interventions that we are trying to do to make kids more active work, well, then they're going to start playing more sports and they're going to get hurt. So we're going to have to figure out a little bit more on when the average kid becomes more active, it's a different kind of problem to have. Are there certain things that he or she shouldn't do because he or she's not we've convinced them to do it, but they're not the athlete. Maybe they don't have the athlete's body and the care they need to take.
Right.
So that's a huge thing.
Right.
Certainly from a public health standpoint, most all of our research, certainly anything sponsored by the National Institutes of Health, that's the whole point of NIH is the public's health. So we're more involved in policy in terms of physical activity being parts of preventive programs and hopefully the whole exercise is medicine thing and reimbursement for physicians talking to their patients about exercise. That's a huge thing that is so new to my lifetime and probably yours in terms of a strategy and just an opportunity for our field. So it's a lot of exciting things.
You just mentioned exercise as medicine. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what that is?
Sure. This is a program that started not that long ago. It seems like forever since I've been involved in it, but it's only about 3 years ago. The ACSM, along with the American Medical Association, launched an initiative with some corporate support called Exercise as Medicine. And the whole point is to teach physicians a little bit more. We were talking earlier about obstetricians. That's a perfect example in my world, obstetricians. Talk to their patients about exercise. So number one, they have to learn a little bit about it. But even if they don't know that much, at least know where to send their patients. But the first thing they have to do is ask them about it.
Mm.
So we're to the point where we want to make the asking just like what's your blood pressure, what's your heart rate, height and weight, and those sorts of things. And when we get to that point, then the physicians are going to have to start doing it because they won't get it reimbursed as much if they don't ask. Mm. So that's where we are now, because you know the CDC has told us that physical inactivity is the number one health risk, if there's one thing they could change in this country, it would be to make all the inactive people active, and you would positively affect health from and prevent so many chronic diseases. So now that
bears repeating for the audience. That's the number one thing that people could change. That's
exactly.
More than smoking, more than obesity. Yeah.
Yep.
More than all the other things we think of, HIV,
That's
breast
right.
cancer, all the other things that seem to get a lot of airplay and a lot of attention, physical inactivity
Correct.
Is more important to the health.
There's studies looking at the cost of this because it's tied to so many. I mean, virtually every chronic disease is prevented some way or another by physical activity. And the opposite is physically inactive people are more likely to get heart disease and to get cancer and other problems. So the more we can promote that, the better we're going to do not only mortality but also morbidity and that's from a healthcare, just from an economic standpoint, that's huge.
Well, so many people think though when you say that you need to start exercising, they think they're going to have to put on the Lycra shorts and go out and run 5 miles.
Right.
And that's really not what it's about. I notice your center is the Center for Physical Activity and Health.
Correct. Yeah, it's exercise is a form of physical activity that implies organization and maybe some sort of a sport or possibly even a competition. Doesn't have to be, but that's the inference. And you're right. That's what scares people away. Well, I'm not very good at those sorts. I'm not good at sports. I had a lousy physical education program. Problem with that is all those kids that had lousy programs ended up being on school boards and cut our physical education. So it's our own fault.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're trying to turn the tide on that. But yeah, physical activity. It's 150 minutes a week of walking or heavy yard work. Or you all don't shovel snow too much down in Texas A&M, I suspect. But
no, we hope we don't. That's for
yeah.
Sure. If we do, global warming really has started.
Yeah, but any of those sorts of activities count in terms of your health. So it doesn't have to be in the fitness center that you maybe can't afford or feel a little inhibited going to.
So housework like vacuuming and washing
sure.
dishes and all that counts, huh?
That's right.
So if I did that, then I would actually be working towards health.
That's correct, and a clean house.
And
yeah.
It's like exercise is great for so many things. You get a clean house out of it as well, right?
Well, I think people are playing around now with things like you get a bunch of kids, you've probably seen them riding bicycles, and it's hooked up in front of a TV
mm-hmm.
game, and it's hooked up to some generator that runs the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Because we're out there running in the roads, and years ago I thought, well, where's, this energy, it's great for me, but it would be nice if I was turning a crank and moving a car or doing something. And finally, the technology's caught up with it a little bit. So I think probably not in our lifetime, but soon down the road, we're going to have this figured out, and there's going to be more of that kind of thing going on.
That would help somewhat with the childhood obesity thing.
Sure would.
If the kids were willing to watch TV, they had to cycle the generator to power
Absolutely.
The TV, huh?
That's right. You got to earn it.
So parents, if you're listening, there's your idea.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
oh, yeah.
Great idea.
Sure.
I think we're going to wrap it up here now, Jim.
Okay.
This has been wonderful. We're actually reached our time limit here. We always give our guests a chance to give a big take-home message for our listening audience. You have a take-home message you'd like people to remember?
Well, I think from a physical activity standpoint in pregnancy, I get calls all the time from women that, well, what can I tell my doctor, et cetera? And I try to arm them with, I send them to the places that I told you about in terms of the various articles. And in the old days, I'd say get a new physician, but you can't always do that. But at least, talk intelligently, be honest with them, but say, look, these are the data. And they treat you a little differently. You probably know that when you go to a doctor and you can actually, they can use words longer than four letters, and you understand them. Once the physician understands that you've read a little bit and you're into it, then they treat you a little differently. So just come armed with the right information, and I mean the not some blog somewhere, but I mean the federal guidelines. If the feds think physical activity during pregnancy is okay, it must be, because they wouldn't put anything out like that if there was any question. So
Right.
There's a lot these women can do now.
And you were involved in that effort to write those guidelines.
Correct.
So I know that, we know that it takes a lot of effort to get those things done. And
sure.
Once the federal government gives it a stamp of approval, it's a good stamp of approval.
It is. Certainly is.
Yeah. Thank you so much today for being with us today, Jim. We've really enjoyed it. And we thank everyone that's listening for taking the time to listen to us. We want to remind you to every week check out huffinesinstitute.tamu.edu to find out what the new podcast is. The best thing yet you can do is actually subscribe when you're on the podcast page, and then the podcast will be automatically downloaded to your MP3 player most of the time on Fridays. So you always got something to look forward to on Fridays besides the end of the work week. You always have a new podcast. We call around here Podcast Friday. So we encourage everyone to subscribe. Thank you again for listening, and we hope you have a active and healthy week.
So here's our T-shirt swag giveaway question. Now remember to send your answers to huffinespodcast@tamu.edu. According to Dr. Pavarnik, if mothers exercise during pregnancy, what happens to the child's body weight after delivery? We look forward to seeing your answers.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Justin Dobson and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, providing voiceovers internationally. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.